You are listening to the Ministry 127 podcast, a ministry of Lancaster Baptist Church and Pastor Paul Chapel. Today's lesson is on building excellent ensembles with John Guy. John Guy is a graduate of West Coast Baptist College, and he serves as the music director at Lancaster Baptist Church.
Psalm 40, verse 3. I want to share a quick verse with you. That verse says, "He hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear, and shall trust in the Lord." It's kind of interesting. That word new there means new. Different than the old. The song that we sing now is different than the song that we sang before we were saved. And that verse is teaching that he puts a new song into our mouth, even praise unto our God. He classifies it, and he says that many shall see it in fear and shall trust in the Lord. I believe that music is a great tool in our services. But as music directors and coordinators and so forth, we need to be careful not to get into ruts, that we don't just do the same thing every year, the same program, the same ensemble, the same children's group for Mother's Day, the same song for Patriotic Sunday, whatever the case might be. We want to always be looking for ways that we can build and ways that we can grow. And I believe that one of the ways to do that is by branching out into the area of ensembles and using ensembles. And an ensemble is more than just a quartet or a trio. Maybe 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 people. And there are different benefits and uses for an ensemble. We'll talk about some of those. But I believe that really second only to the choir, one of the greatest tools that you have for growing and strengthening your music ministry would be ensembles. These groups of, again, 8 or 10 or 6, whatever it might be, where you have more than one person on a part. Just kind of curious, as we get started here, how many of you have at least one type of an ensemble in your music ministry now? Just curious. Okay. Good. I hope that maybe through this lesson you'll either start one if you don't have one, or maybe add a new one, or really work to make the one that you have as good as it can be and as quality as it can be. But the title of this session is Building Excellent Ensembles, and building, of course, assumes that we're starting about the ground level, or we're just not quite satisfied with where we are, and we want to build, and we want to grow, and we want to do better. But number one under this is getting started. Getting started. Letter A would be the purpose of an ensemble. Why not just have a choir and a couple of duets and trios and quartets and just kind of smaller groups? What's the purpose of an ensemble? Number one under this is that it's going to add a new dimension to your music team and to your music ministry. An ensemble is unique in its sound. It sounds different than a choir. It sounds different than a quartet. It's also somewhat unique in how it works with a trio, with a quartet. You really have to make sure that every person knows their part and knows it really well. They all have to be strong singers. With an ensemble, you don't necessarily have to have that. It's good to have one, at least, on a part that's strong. That helps. But you don't always have to have everybody as a soloist if they're going to be a part of an ensemble. An ensemble can usually learn music that's harder than a choir can. With a choir, you're dealing with more people. A lot of times, your choir is just going to be everybody and anybody who can smile and carry a tune and wants to be a part. With an ensemble, you can handpick it a little bit more, and so they can. They may not necessarily all be musically skilled to a great degree, but you at least have a person on a part that can maybe read some music, or that can carry a tune fairly well, and they can help to strengthen the other ones. So they can usually learn music faster than the choir can. It will improve the quality of your choir using ensembles, and here's why. Whether it's you or somebody else, usually it'll be you're at least working with one ensemble. If you have multiple ensembles, you may need some help directing them. But as you're working with ensembles, you can work on some more detailed parts of music. You can talk a little bit more about timings and rhythms and how to sing and how to pronounce and how to articulate. Well, those 8 or 10 people that are in that ensemble then go from that ensemble into your choir. And then they have some tools, and they're a little bit better equipped as a choir member. And they help to strengthen the sound even of your choir. I mentioned this already, but not every member needs to be strong. They don't necessarily have to be a strong lead on their part. And really, just using ensembles will add this new dimension to your music ministry, more than just, again, a quartet or a trio. Number two, the reasons for having an ensemble, or the purpose of an ensemble, would be to involve your members. An ensemble is a great way to pull some of the more talented singers from your choir and to use them. And nothing is more exciting for me than to see the ensemble members just loving what they're doing and being a part of something more than just the choir, but they get to be a part of an ensemble too. And they start to put in some extra time on a Wednesday night or a Sunday afternoon or whatever the practice time is, and they start to get involved in that way. They enjoy doing that. Letter B, ways to use an ensemble. This is all just kind of some preliminary things here, but ways to use an ensemble. Number one under this would obviously be as a special. They learn a song and they get up on a Sunday morning or a Sunday night and they sing it in your special spot or maybe as an offertory, whatever the case might be. But just as a special. Number two, in front of your choir. We did this Monday night with the song Revive Us Again. The verses were sung by the ensemble. The choir came in on the chorus. Again, your ensemble is usually going to be a little more skilled and they can learn music faster. This allows you to grow your choir repertoire a little faster because the choir only has to learn the chorus. Choir learns the chorus and maybe the ending. The ensemble works on the verses, which usually they're a little trickier. The verses have more words. Usually the timing's a little trickier. The chorus is a little more predictable, so it'll be easier for the choir. So you can use an ensemble in front of the choir. And the choir just really adds the strength on the choruses. You can also use it in front of the choir if the choir is learning a new song. Sometimes with a choir opener, if it's a new opener for the choir, I'll take an ensemble and put them out front with microphones because it helps to support the parts and it helps just to support the energy level. Sometimes the choir on a Sunday morning, we're doing a brand new opener, they can come in a little tired or a little hesitant and it doesn't quite have the strength that I want it to have. And so take an ensemble and give them that same song and have them work on it for a few weeks and they can pick out some parts. And the good thing is too, those ensemble members are coming to choir practice, so they get double practice on that particular type of a song. And then you put the ensemble in front of the choir, and it just helps to support the choir. It gives the choir some more confidence. Out in the congregation, you hear the parts more clearly because some of the ensemble members are singing parts on the microphones. So using the ensemble in front of the choir. Number three, you can use an ensemble during congregationals. You could have maybe an ensemble come up and sing a special. Then immediately after the special, you choose a congregational song that ties right in. Keep the ensemble up there and have them just pick out a part. You don't even have to spend a lot of time necessarily in practice working on those songs. If you want maybe a practice before or two, you can take the song like What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And I think we did that last night. We kept the ensemble up and they sang What a Friend We Have in Jesus and they can pick out a part. Those who can't pick out a part real well, just have them sing melody and that's fine. But it helps just to support some of the energy of the congregational singing. Using an ensemble during congregationals. Number four, you can use an ensemble also to teach a new song. Maybe you've got a theme chorus for the year. It helps to have an ensemble if they can get up, even if they all sing the melody, just to teach that melody to the congregation. If you want to add some parts, they could sing the verses melody, they could sing some parts on the chorus, but it helps to teach a new song. If you come across maybe a newer hymn that's just got some good doctrinal words to it and easy melody and simple harmonies that are predictable and you want to teach some of those types of songs to the congregation, you can have the ensemble sing it a few times. Maybe sing it as a special on a Sunday morning, sing it as a special on a Sunday night, and right after that, have the congregation sing along with it. Sometimes you'll come across a song that just makes well for a congregation, whether it's a chorus or even an arrangement. Just using an ensemble to teach a new song to the congregation. Psalm 40, verse 3, might be in your notes there, says, He hath put a new song in my heart. And we certainly love the great hymns of the faith, How Great Thou Art, Blessed Assurance, Wonderful Grace of Jesus. But I believe there are some songs that are worth doing out there that are newer songs that have been arranged more recently that work very well congregationally. And so you can use an ensemble for that purpose. Number two. Choosing ensemble members. Choosing ensemble members. Where do you start for your ensemble members? Letter A, I put down, pull from your choir. Pull from your choir. You want to have a good foundational base of your music ministry, and the choir is a good place to start. Occasionally, you may have somebody who is a great singer, but maybe they serve in another ministry, and they can't sing in the choir, and so you can make exceptions as is needed. You don't want to be so strict with that, but most of the time, probably 98%, 99% of the time, you want to pull your ensemble members right from the choir. Letter B, use faithful choir members. If they're not faithful to choir, they're not going to come to your practice. use faithful choir members who are proven, and choir members who have a good testimony. We tell all of our choir members before they join the choir that you are entering a visible position of leadership. They might be even a newer Christian, maybe been in the church for a year or so, and they've come through the new members class, and they want to get involved, and they just see the choir, and it's so amazing, and they want to get up there and be a part of it. Well, I sit down with them, and I explain to them, now this is a visible position of leadership. You're up in front of people, and they don't know that you're a newer choir member. They would expect certain things, and most, probably about 80 or 90% of the folks understand that when they're entering into the choir. Well, even more so when they go from the choir to an ensemble, because now they're out in front, they're up on the platform, and there are certain requirements that we would ask of our choir members and our ensemble members. So you want to use faithful members. Letter C, know your choir members. You've got to know who can carry the tune and who can sing a part, and who, if they can't read music, can at least follow someone pretty well on an alto part or a tenor part. So you really need to work to know your choir members and to know their abilities. Maybe you have someone who's musical who can stand out there next to a tenor and listen for you. It's not always possible unless, sometimes you can tell just by standing up and directing, but as the choir grows, it's not always possible to know the guy way in the back, if he's got a good voice or if he's a good bass, whatever it might be, or one of the ladies. So maybe you have a man that you know sings really well, or a lady you know sings really well. Have him stand next to somebody, get to know him a little bit. We don't do auditions for our choir. We'll just take anybody who'll come. I just tell them, as long as you can smile, we'll take you. But we want them to just be involved, and to be involved in ministry and have that opportunity to serve. But it's important as a choir director to know the members of the choir so that you can pick out some of that talent and plug them in into some smaller groups and ensembles. Letter D, stack each part. Stack each part. If you can identify one strong soprano, one strong tenor, one strong alto, one strong bass, if you choose to use a bass, which if you're starting an ensemble, you don't even necessarily have to have a bass. You could do a three-part. But try to find at least one person per part that can carry their part fairly well and really lead the part, in a sense. In just about every one of our ensembles, we have members who aren't real musical. They can sing, but they can't read music. And they don't even necessarily know how to follow music or to know that it's going up or going down, but they can stand next to somebody else who's strong and learn the part, and they sing it enough times in practice and they get it. And then when you go to actually mic the group, you've got certain people that you're going to mic just a little bit louder than others. And you stack the ensemble. That way you're not looking for just premier soloists across the platform, because most of us don't have 8 or 10 or 12 soloists that we can put into an ensemble. But you can maybe find one or two or three that are stronger on their part and can help to work with some of the other ones. And again, that's where there's a strength to an ensemble that a trio or a quartet doesn't have. If you've got an alto and a mixed trio and they just can't quite get their part, it's going to be pretty obvious when they get up to sing. But you can put that same person next to a stronger alto and then with another alto who's about the same or a little stronger, and then that alto does well, does okay, and blends in well. And so you want to learn how to stack the parts and really know your ensembles, especially for when you do go to do a sound check or to balance the group with microphones. You need to know who your strong sopranos are and who your strong tenors are so that you can mic it appropriately. So that's just a little bit about choosing some ensemble members and where to pull from. Number three, let's talk about choosing music. Choosing music for an ensemble. How do you know what's going to work well? Wrong session. How do you know what's going to work well for an ensemble? Letter A, I wrote this down. Keep it simple first. Keep it simple at first. If you're starting a new ensemble, even if you already have some ensembles, but you say, hey, I want to add another mixed ensemble, or I want to start a men's ensemble or a teen ensemble, keep it simple. Don't try to conquer the world with your first ensemble, because you really sometimes don't know. I mean, it's kind of a little bit of a step of faith. You're putting these people together. You think, okay, most of them are fairly decent singers, so I think this will work well. Try to choose a song that has a very predictable melody, simple harmonies that are easy to find. You could even choose to have somebody sing a solo on the verses, just bring the ensemble in on the chorus. Something that's just pretty straightforward for the group the first time. Something that they can pick up fast, a tune that's somewhat catchy or, you know, that they enjoy singing. Something that's not too fast, that has solid, predictable chords, simple timings, something that's not too high for the sopranos, not too low for the basses. Just try to think through that. Keep it simple first. You can develop and grow as your ensemble does, but when you're first starting out, really keep that in mind. I mentioned this, but you may even try just doing three parts, the soprano, alto, tenor, or soprano, alto, tenor, baritone type of a part where the men aren't going too high, they're not going too low. That way you can get away with two or three sopranos, two or three altos, and maybe two or three tenors or baritones. And then you're really only looking at about eight people, maybe 10 people, to start the ensemble. Letter B, keep the music exciting. Music ministry should be fun, something that music members look forward to and going to practices and being a part of that. Obviously, they're going to put in some extra time, so you want to make sure that the music is music that they're going to enjoy singing, music that's encouraging and uplifting. No one wants to sing boring music, and honestly, no one wants to listen to it either. So really make that a priority, finding the right music for that ensemble and keeping it exciting and keeping it encouraging. Letter C, adjust the music for the group. And this is important because sometimes you have to be creative with an ensemble. You have to fit the song to your ensemble. Don't try to fit your ensemble to the song. Make the song work for the group. I've known people who've worked with ensembles and they're a little more straightforward in their approach and you've got to do it exactly the way that it is. And if you can't do it this way, we're just going to have to either sound really bad or do something else. But you have to learn how to be creative at times with music and just change some parts or lower something or skip a section or straighten a section and just make it easier if the accompaniment's too difficult. Try to work through a way that it works for your accompanist and be willing to adjust the group, the music for the group. We have various different groups. We've got obviously some mixed groups, some men's groups, some ladies' groups. And in some of our groups, we'll take it down to just two parts instead of four on the verses. Maybe go to four at the chorus or even three at the chorus if it's just not coming together the way that it could or that it should. So adjusting the music for the group. Letter D, have an ensemble learn a song and sing it before the choir does. Have an ensemble learn a song and sing it before the choir does. This is going to do a few things for you. First of all, it's going to give you the chance to try on a song. If you have 30 or 40 in your choir, and you have an ensemble of eight people, you can order eight octavos and try it out. And if it works well, if the group picks it up well, then go ahead and order it for your choir. And then you could even try the first time the choir sings it, put that ensemble in front of the choir, because they already know it. When you go to choir practice, after the ensemble has learned the song and sung the song, you go to choir practice and bring it to your choir. Then you have 8 or 10 people in the choir who already know the song because they were in the ensemble. And the choir has already heard the song because you sang it as a special once, maybe even twice. So have an ensemble learn a song and sing it before the choir does. Just a practical way to try to incorporate the ensemble into your music ministry. Chances are if an ensemble learns the song quickly, the choir will probably learn the song quickly. And so just a helpful thing there. Number four, ensemble administration. Ensemble administration. This is going to be a little bit more of the practical, organizational side. But how do you really organize ensembles? And how do you keep some lists? And how do you get some things going? Letter A under this is ensemble boxes. Ensemble boxes. And what we do for each ensemble is they have a box. It's similar to just a file box is what it is. And for each of the practices, the ensemble leader takes that box and goes to the practice with it. We keep it in a general location where they can all access it in one of our music closets. And they take it to the practice. It has the current music they're working on. It has an attendance sheet in it. I like to keep track of, you know, who's coming. I can't be at all the practices, but I can at least know if somebody's been missing. And most ensemble members, again, they're going to be your more faithful folks, so they're going to be there and they're going to be engaged. But occasionally, you'll as you're trying to pastor the music ministry, you'll come across somebody who's missing an ensemble practice, and you may need to contact them and see if that's really going to work for them, or if maybe you need to find somebody to replace them. But that ensemble box will have an attendance sheet in it. Once you get an ensemble going, you can actually put more than one song in their box. That's good because not every song works for an ensemble. You may have two or three or four songs in an ensemble box at a time, And you may say, well, let's try this song, and let's see how this works, how this fits with the group. And you may sing through it a week or two, and it's just not working well for you. And then you can pull out another one. The other side of that is you can be working on one, and you can get it down real well, and you're singing it in a week or two. Well, pick up the next one that you're going to do maybe in another month and a half, and start looking at that and really get ahead. And what that ensemble box is going to show to your ensemble is that you're prepared. You've come to that practice, you know where you're going, you know what's coming up, you know what songs you want them to work on, and you've got a plan in place. Usually the ensemble will focus on the next song they're singing, but they're looking forward to maybe the next song after that, starting to look at it, starting to work on it as needed. So those ensemble boxes we found have been very helpful. Occasionally, just depending on the song, we'll put a practice CD in the ensemble box. The ensemble members usually appreciate that when we can. Just they can put something in their car on the way to work. They can be listening and learning some words. And once they get their part, they can sing along with it. So that usually helps. That CD can even have three or four songs on it, upcoming songs on it. And they keep that in their car for 4 or 6 months. And it's just they're working on it. So by the time you get through that first song and pull up the second song, they've been listening to it for 2 months already. And it comes a little more natural and a little faster. So those ensemble boxes are just a real practical way that we can organize the ensembles. Letter B would be our repertoire list. The repertoire list is going to be, we use just an Excel document, and at the bottom we've a different tab for the choir and each ensemble and each group and each soloist. You click on a tab for a group or for the choir, and it has a list of all the songs that they've sung and the last date when they sang it. And this is going to be a reference tool for you as you're planning and organizing. So the repertoire list is going to... The other thing at the bottom of the repertoire list is I have a section that says new songs. And that's the list of everything that's in the box or that I'm thinking about giving to that group. So when I get to the music schedule, I can refer to the repertoire list and I can say, okay, I've sorted through all these songs. These are possible songs for this ensemble. Then I can go back and I can listen to those songs again, pull out the music again, and make a final decision. They may not always do every one of those songs under the new songs, but if I think a song might work for a group, I'm going to put it on that list under their tab on that Excel sheet in that repertoire list. And just so you know, there was a time here. I mean, I've been in the music ministry here for 2 years, so I came in and we had a lot of things established. But the very first ensemble that this church had, the first and only ensemble it had for a long time, was the LBC ensemble. And they would sing twice a month. They would sing a new song and they would sing a repeat. And their practices were about an hour long. Our practices now aren't that long, but we can kind of spread it out a little bit. We can spread out the responsibilities of different groups and so forth. But that first ensemble was a mixed ensemble, and they were learning a lot of music at once just to kind of keep the music schedule filled with music. And so just kind of depending on where you are, that might give you just an idea or some helps there. Letter C is the database. And the database is going to be, again, another Excel sheet. And this is just a list of all the songs with the publisher, author, arranger. If it's in a book, it has the title of the book. And then it has the group that's singing it or the group that it's assigned to. And this is a little bit more of a reference document. But in this case, if I come across a song and I'm not sure if a group's singing it, I can refer to this database and it'll tell me this is assigned to this group or this trio sang this song 6 years ago. And if that trio is still in existence, I don't want to give that song to somebody else because they may sing it again or something like that. So the database, it just has every song that's ever been sung. I looked at our database. I think we have about 2,100 songs in our database. I'm not sure how long they've been keeping that database, but I just kind of picked that up in the past 2 years, and we've just been keeping it up. So that database is a little bit of a reference. The repertoire list you'll use on a more regular basis as you're planning your schedule because it's going to have a list of songs that you think would work for each of those groups. The database is a little bit more of a reference. Letter D is going to be the music schedule. This is your month-to-month plan on how you're going to use your ensembles. I mentioned this in one of my other sessions, but I want to mention it again, that what I try to do for the music schedule is sometime around October is sit down and plan out the entire next year of choir songs and the ensembles who'll sing, the groups who'll sing, soloists who'll sing. So by January 1st, I have a template. Now, it's going to change. by about January 2nd, it's probably going to change a little bit. Music ministry does that. But it gives me a fresh start for the year. It gives me a big picture. It helps me to keep variety so that I'm not singing the same song all the time or using the same group all the time. Now, again, that's what I put on that list would be the choir songs. So what I'll do is I'll pull up my list, my repertoire list of all the choir songs we've sung that we know and we can sing, and I'll start putting it on the schedule. I try to keep the songs spread out, and I try to think seasonally, different times of the year. We want to do songs that are more familiar. Coming out of a big conference like this, the next couple of weeks, the songs that we're going to sing are going to be real familiar songs because we'll have shorter practices because we've taken a lot of time from the choir to prepare for the conference. So after the conference, we'll give some of that time back. So I don't want to try some new song that we just learned. Whoa, almost came off. I don't want to try something that they don't know as well. So I try to think seasonally while I'm doing that as well. It keeps it balanced. It saves you time. And so this music schedule is really going to be the day-to-day document that I'm using. And what I do then is about 2 months in advance, I'm thinking of the specific songs for the soloists and the groups and the ensembles. That's where, like right now, I'll be looking at like September and October, referring to the repertoire list, looking under each of those ensembles, what songs do I want them to sing, you know, or what songs do I think they would sing well or do well with, and I can choose from those songs. And then I put it on about a month to 2 months in advance, usually about a month and a half to 2 months in advance, so that you can have enough time to get that to the ensemble. So that's what the music schedule is. Another program that I've recently started using, and this a lot depends on your music ministry and the dynamic of it, but I've started to use an online program called Planning Center. Planning Center Online. It's an internet-based program that your ensembles can use and you can schedule your services with. And you'll find that they appreciate something like that. It's a communication tool. It keeps track for you of who's confirmed for a service. For instance, if I put together, I'll take my music schedule and I'll look 2 or 3 or 4 weeks out and I'll start putting together the cue card on Planning Center. Let's say I schedule the College and Career Ensemble. That when I schedule the College and Career Ensemble, all of their names come up on Planning Center, and then I can send them an email that invites them to that service. So on their end, they can either get an email or they can get a text message, depending on how they set it up, that gives them a real generic screen. It says accept, decline, or view service. So they can go on and they can look at that date. It says you're scheduled for this date. They can say, okay, I'm not on vacation, or I can do that. Chances are they already know about it anyway. They can click accept. It takes them to Planning Center Online, and they can view that cue card online. That really is what it is. They can view that schedule. I can then upload MP3s to their song. I can upload PDFs and Word documents if I want the words or something. So it's a little bit of a tool more for, not so much for the choir, but more for the ensembles and the groups, a communication tool. And I know a lot of the folks have appreciated using that. They can also go online. They have their own account. You set each of your members up. And you can give them different viewing privileges and so forth. They can just view the schedules the services that they're scheduled for. You can give limited access or more access depending on the groups. They can also go on and put in their vacation dates. So if I go to schedule a trio and then I go to send them an email, it's going to tell me that member of that trio is on vacation that day. They put in their block out dates. And then the other thing is, it'll show me anybody else who can sing that part, who could fill in for them. If they get the accept or decline screen, they can hit decline. They can put a reason or they can just decline. They don't have to necessarily put a reason. It comes back to me and says they decline, and here's the list of everybody else who can fill that position. It may be a piano player, or it may be an alto. It kind of depends sometimes on the dynamic of your ministry. Most groups are going to be established groups, and if that alto can't sing in that group, then you can't use that group, but at least it gives you a feel for it. Depending on your ministry, and as the ministry grows, and maybe you have different piano players or musicians or people who can be involved or singers who can jump in and fill in a group, if somebody is not available, that Planning Center will help you to kind of administrate that and fill that spot and get somebody singing that part. So it's been a tool that I've been using for about 6 months now, and it's been a help. So that's the music schedule. Letter E would be communicate. Communication is a key to having effective ensembles. I've met people who have worked in music ministry and they're not necessarily good communicators, and they might be a little more creative, and they like to just sit down and put together a song, but they don't always think of the big picture and who's involved, and okay, this group's not singing, so I need to communicate to them, and I need to make sure this person knows what's going on. And when there are changes, you have to make sure that you're always communicating with those that are on your team. Otherwise, it's going to frustrate them. They're not going to want to be involved because they feel like they're not getting the communication that they need. Always work at responding. Even if you don't necessarily have an answer, respond to those emails and help to keep people in the loop on various different things. Number five, Roman numeral number five, is practices. As you're building your ensembles and thinking through how you're going to use them or how you're going to prepare the groups and prepare the music, you have to think of practices. Letter A is choose a convenient time. Every music ministry is going to be a little different, but you want to choose a time that's going to be convenient for your ensemble members. If you can arrange it around something that's previously scheduled, like a service, that's always easier than calling people in on a Monday night or having them come in on a Friday or a Saturday afternoon or something like that. If you can do it around a Wednesday night after church, that's when we do the majority of ours. We'll do some Sunday afternoon before church, Sunday night after church. You don't want to ask them to come in on an off night because you won't get as the participation won't be as strong that way. Letter B, keep your practices the right length. This is going to depend on how often they sing. I mentioned that when we started our first ensemble, they practiced for about an hour at least on Wednesday nights, just because they had to sing a lot. But the average practice time for one of our ensembles now is about 30 minutes. We have a ladies group, and they sing probably about every 2 months, as opposed to they sing about every 8 or 9 weeks, as opposed to every 5 to 6 weeks. So I've asked that their practices only be about 15 or 20 minutes. They don't need to necessarily have a super long practice. But you want to be considerate of people's time. You want to keep the practices moving. Have a plan when you come into your practice time. And that would be true for not only ensemble practices, but even choir practice. Really know where you're going with those practices. Know what the difficult sections are that you need to work on that week, and just keep them moving. Start your practice on time. Don't call people to a practice 10 minutes after the service and then start 20 minutes and then 25 minutes and then 30 minutes. Have some structure to those practices and keep them just the right length. Letter C, give enough practice time in between when they sing. Most of our ensembles have about 6 weeks in between when they sing. If an ensemble sings this Sunday, then next Wednesday I'm going to give them off. We won't practice. And so when we pick it up, we'll have about 5 Wednesdays to practice. Some of that's going to depend on the ensemble. The longer a group is together as an ensemble, you'll find that the faster they'll be picking up music. They just kind of get used to each other, and they blend faster, and they start to, as you're working with the ensembles, you're working on some of the more intricate parts of music and how to blend and how to sing with proper vowels and how to enunciate and those sort of things. So the more they work together, the faster they can pick up music. Quartets and trios are usually about 4 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks. The men's and ladies ensembles, I usually try to give a little extra time, 7, 8, maybe even 9 weeks. So you want to make sure that you space it out. You don't want to just schedule an ensemble every other week to sing and just expect them to have their music ready. So those are just some practical things about practices, keeping them the right length, giving enough time in between when they practice, choosing the right time, and so forth. Number six, Roman numeral number six, would be sound checks. I'm going to teach a session right after this specifically on sound checks and go through a little bit more detail, but letter A under this is that sound checks prepare the group for Sunday. Saturday night is your final preparation for Sunday, or Friday, whenever you might do it, or even Wednesday night after church, just depending. But try to think of a time when you can have your ensemble come in and actually sing it on the platform with microphones before the service. You don't want to just put a group up there on Sunday morning and hope that the sound guy mixes it well, you know, by the second chorus or something. Sunday morning is no time for surprises. So having a sound check and having a time when they can come in and kind of get a feel for the platform and hearing themselves out of the monitors or holding the microphone and how to hold the microphone, it's good for them. A sound check is going to accomplish a couple things. It's going to give you one more practice time. It's going to help you to, it's going to give you the opportunity to balance the group and to make sure that they're mixed well, to check monitor levels, to make sure that they can hear themselves on the platform, make sure the piano player can hear the group. It also gives you a chance to see if they're ready. Sometimes they're not ready. And sometimes you have to make a Saturday night call and say, let's wait another 2 weeks. Let's work on this song for another 2 weeks, and we'll pull together a trio or a quartet or something for tomorrow night. There have been plenty of times when we've had to do that. A group's just not ready. And so that sound check is an opportunity to hear it one final time and to make sure that it's appropriate and ready for the service and for the platform. Letter B under this walk through details. Walk through details. Have a checklist. Maybe talk about positioning the group, how to hold the microphone. Every microphone's different and picks up voices differently. So I try to talk through the ensembles, how to specifically hold the microphone, not to hold it pointing up, not to hold it straight in, hold it about a 45-degree angle, about 2 inches away from the mouth, and we talk about that. Hold it in your right hand. We walk through those details at that sound check and just make sure that everybody's on the right page and on the same page. We'll talk through about how to express the song, communicating to the congregation. You don't want an ensemble just to stand up there and just kind of sing like this and not really move and not really look at anybody. You want them to smile. You want them to have energy. You want them to turn and to look and to make eye contact and to communicate the song. We talk through those sort of things at a sound check. You can talk through how to walk up or when to walk up, how to walk down, when to walk down, where they are in the order of the service and so forth. Just walking through those various different details. And finally, number 7 here is encourage your members. Encourage your members. You have to remember that we're working with volunteers. These are just church folks. And we always want to be appreciative of their time. We always want to try to encourage them and to keep them involved in serving the Lord. But letter A, I wrote down express appreciation. This could be something just face-to-face as you see them after they sing on a Sunday morning. Hey, I appreciate that song. Did a great job. And shaking their hand or making that eye contact. It could also be handwritten notes. Just about every Monday morning, I'm writing notes to somebody who sang on Sunday. A personal note, not just a generic print it off and, you know, send this to them. But a personal note. Appreciate your time. Thank you for coming to practices for 4 weeks and working on this song. Sounded great. I feel like the Lord used that. It was a blessing. Just writing those handwritten notes, and they go a long way. It might be some emails, just encouraging throughout the week, letters. After a big event, really take time to thank those who were involved. Sit down and think through who helped with this program, who sang in that group, who helped with the children, who helped to lead this ensemble, or who helped to lead that group. And write thank you notes and be appreciative to those who serve. Letter B, have fellowships. Have fellowships. Maybe 2 or 3 times a year, have the ensemble over to your home or to the home of someone who has a piano and have a practice at your house or at their house and then have a fellowship afterwards. Develop friendships within the group. Your closest friends are going to be those that you serve with. And just developing that camaraderie. A lot of times, even on Saturday nights after sound checks, we've worked with a group of 12 or 14 folks, and we might hang around for a few minutes and just talk and just develop those friendships and just be an encouragement to each other and edify each other. But have those fellowships. And again, that's going to express appreciation. That's going to be an encouragement to them. Having someone into your home is always an expression of appreciation, and it just opens up that door for just communication with them, but also being able to pastor them and to lead them and to encourage them along the way. And so those are just a couple of practical things. But building an excellent ensemble is not impossible. Building excellent ensembles is not impossible, but it does take work. And I've given a couple of practical things as far as ensemble boxes and lists and repertoires and music schedules and things like that.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry 127 podcast. Today's lesson was on building excellent ensembles with John Guy.